Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you radio drama in this hour. Later on, we hear Gulliver's Travels from 1946. But first, the Let's Pretend series takes on the famous story, Beauty and the Beast, a CBS broadcast from June 5th, 1954.
Your friend. The story is exciting from start right to the end. So everyone come join the fun. Come on and let's pretend.
From New York City, it's radio's outstanding children's theater, Let's Pretend, created by Nyla Beck. And here's Uncle Bill Adams to get us started on today's story, Beauty and the Beast.
Hello, pretenders.
Hello, Uncle Bill.
Hey, have you ever been real scared to do something and then when you finally got at it, found out it wasn't so bad after all?
Yeah.
Yes, it often happens that way. Something that seems scary turns out to be fine, and that's just what happens in our story today. And Bob Murray, suppose you tell us how we traveled to Let's Pretend and that story of Beauty and the Beast.
Well, there's a beast in the story. Let's all travel on animals from the zoo.
Well, that's a great idea. So, Sybil, will you take charge of the magic?
Magical sound men? We'd like a fine parade of lions, tigers, elephants, and camels. One, two, three. And there we are. Choose your favorite seat, everybody. Get on their backs and let's go.
Once upon a time, there was a rich shipowner who had two daughters. The older one, Ethelinda, was proud and selfish, but the younger was sweet and kind and so lovely that everyone called her Beauty. And now one day, their father lost all his riches. He and his daughters had to go live in a tiny cottage deep in the woods where nothing was easy and pleasant as it had been. But Beauty was cheerful even there and sang as she worked about the cottage.
I have a rose locket, a locket of gold. My prince gave it to me, my prince, brave and bold.
Oh, Beauty, stop singing that stupid song.
Why, Ethelinda, you always used to like it.
Yes, I used to, when we had gold lockets and golden rings to wear. I used to like it when we had fine gowns instead of these rags. When we had some chance of meeting a prince one day.
Oh, don't give up so easily, Ethelinda. It may still happen. Oh, look out the window. There comes Father.
Oh, my goodness, at this time of day?
Girl, I must leave for the city at once. Will you pack me some provisions, Beauty, dear? There's a chance, just a chance of fortune.
Father, what's happened?
What do you mean, a chance of fortune?
Well, a traveler through the forest gave me news of the city and the seaport. He said a ship called the Golden Vanity had docked last month.
The Golden Vanity? But that's your ship, Father.
The one we thought was shipwrecked a year ago.
Oh, Father, if it's come to port at last, then we're rich again.
Oh, easy, daughter, easy. We're not sure it is my ship. Or if it is, whether it brought any cargo. But if luck is with us, what shall I bring you back from the city in celebration?
Oh, Father, some silk and satin for gowns and new slippers and new ribbons, some perfume and...
Oh, enough, Ethelinda. Remember, it's only a chance. But if it is my ship, what do you want, my beauty?
Oh, Father, all I want is a safe trip for you and good news in the city. And then if you want to bring me something, well, I'd love one perfect rose, that's all.
One rose?
As always, you ask little for yourself, dear beauty. But one rose, I promise you, whatever kind of fortune I find. Now I must go saddle the horse and be on my way.
Aye, sir. That's how it is, sir. The crew took all the cargo and made off with it. Heaven only knows where they're scattered to.
And there's nothing left.
Not a bolt of goods, not a two-penny nail. Hard luck, sir. Of course, if you'd been around when the ship docked...
Yes, I know. But tell me, what of the ship itself? Where is it?
The crew sold the vessel and divided the gold. The ship sailed out the next day.
So my whole trip's been in vain. The as poor as ever.
Hard luck, like I said.
Well, there's no use staying here groaning. I might as well start home again with my bad news.
Oh, if you're traveling, sir, you'd best be starting. Those clouds look ugly. Yeah, we're in for a storm.
Yes. Yes, you're right. Well, thank you for your information, and farewell. Worse every moment. Steady, boy. Steady. A little farther. Surely we'll find some sort of shelter. Wait. Isn't that a light glimmering through the trees? Yes. Yes, it is. Come on, Blaze. What? Why, it must be a great castle. The light is high in the tower. And there, just ahead, a huge gate. Boy. Here now. What's the matter, old Blaze? Why are you stopping and trembling? Come on now. Don't you want a dry stable and oats?
No!
Very well, then. I'll go to the gate on foot. Heaven knows what the poor horse fears that could be worse than this night. Ah, yes, yes, the gate. Here's the knocker. Storm. Pray heaven someone answers.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. I'm a poor traveler lost in the storm, craving shelter.
Oh, yes, indeed, sir. Enter. You're most welcome.
Well, thank you. But I say it's not raining in here. The moon is shining. It's as mild as a summer's night.
Oh, yes, sir. If you'll follow me through this garden to the castle, you'll find dinner awaiting you. And every comfort for the night.
But look here, is this some sort of enchantment? Flowers, birds, moonlight? Are you the master here?
Oh, no, sir, no, indeed. If you'll just follow me into the castle now.
Yes, but tell me, will I meet your master within the castle?
I'm sorry, sir, my master sees no one. But I've been told to give you everything you desire. Here is the supper table, set and waiting for you.
What a splendid table. Candlelight, meat, fruit, wine?
Oh, yes, sir. Over there is the door to your room. When you've eaten, feel free to retire whenever you wish. If you want anything, just ring. Good night, sir.
Good night. Well, this is strange indeed. But I'm weary enough to ask no questions. Dinner and then bed. That sounds fine to me.
Beauty's father.
Hmm? What? Am I waking or sleeping? A light. Let me find a candle.
No. Simply listen. Listen to my voice.
Who are you? I see no one. Where are you?
I am your friend. I am in the mists. I am in the wind. I am in the perfume of all flowers, but you cannot see me.
What do you want?
I have come to warn you.
Warn me? Warn me of what?
Tomorrow there will be a test. Watch what you do. If you fail, it may mean death to you and to your daughters.
Oh, no, no, not that. No harm has come to my daughters.
It rests with you. Remember, tomorrow the test. Now sleep and farewell. Farewell.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'd hoped it was my host.
I'm sorry, sir. Only the master's servant, Mollybone. I came to see if you'd finished breakfast.
Yes, yes, I have, thank you. And very excellent it was, too. And now, if you would take me to your master, I would very much like to meet him and thank him for his hospitality before I leave.
My master sees no one, sir, as I told you. Will you walk in the garden until your horse is saddled?
Well, all right. If it's impossible to see my host, Well, the garden is lovely.
I'll call you when your horse is ready, sir.
Oh, my. how Beauty would love this garden. Oh, and that reminds me. The one thing she wanted me to bring her was one perfect rose. And here are hundreds to choose from. Well, let me see. Ah, yes. Yes, here is a perfect rose. Rosy pink as Beauty's own cheeks. I'll pick it. What's that? What a horrible sound. What is it?
How dare you pick my roses?
What a hideous beast. How awful.
Wasn't it enough that I gave you the freedom of my castle, fed you and sheltered you?
Dreaming? I never saw a beast like this. And it talks. Who are you? What is this ghostly place?
I'll show you by eating you alive.
Oh, no, please don't kill me. Let me explain why I took this one rose. Please let me explain.
What is there to explain?
Well, it was not for myself that I wanted the rose beast, but for one of my daughters.
One of your daughters?
Yes, I have two pretty daughters, Beast. And when I left home, I asked each daughter what she would have me bring back as a gift. Alas, I didn't have the good luck I hoped on my journey, so I can take Ethelinda nothing of what she asked. But Beauty, my younger daughter, asked only for a rose. And when I saw all these roses, I thought... Spare a father's life, Beast, a father who is only trying to please a loving, unselfish daughter.
Very well. I will spare your life on one condition. That you go home and send me one of those daughters in your stead.
What? Buy my life with one of theirs?
I do not ask you to force either of them to come. Go home. See if either of your daughters is courageous enough and loves you well enough to come willingly and save your life.
No. No, how could I ask either such a question? How could either agree to come?
If neither is willing to come, you yourself must return. And if you don't, I shall come and fetch you.
So, my daughters, that's the story. Now I must say goodbye and return to the beast.
Goodbye.
Father, what do you mean?
Oh, my daughters, I only pretended to accept that creature's terrible suggestion so I could see you both once more. Now I keep my promise and go back to him.
Oh, no, Father.
If I don't, he will come after me and kill me here.
But this way you walk right into his clutches.
Well, if it be death either way, I would rather meet it as an honorable man, keeping my promise to return.
But it isn't death either way. If one of us goes with you...
But that's impossible. That's unthinkable.
Oh, yes, it's impossible. How could either of us face that fearsome beast? Don't even suggest it, Beauty.
It was the rose I asked for which brought about this misfortune. Father, I'll go back with you to face the beast.
No, Beauty, no, no. You haven't seen the beast.
I'm not going to be afraid. This is better than seeing you go alone. Come, Father. Let us be on our way.
Very well, Beauty. Heaven grant that even a beast so fearsome as he is will be touched by your goodness and love. Heaven help us both.
Although her father protested, Beauty insisted on returning with him to the castle of the beast. Now, nervous but determined, they are entering the castle.
It really is very, very splendid, Father. The beast must be very rich and very powerful.
Oh, Beauty, I shouldn't have allowed you to come. I should have faced him alone.
No, Father. He would surely have killed you then. But I wish... Now we're here, I wish he'd come. Everything's so quiet. There's such a strange, unearthly air of mystery everywhere.
Yes, yes, it's all just as it was before. The servant, Marleybone, opening the gate. No sign of anyone anywhere.
Father! What's that?
Oh, Beauty, Beauty, my dearest daughter.
It's the beast. He's coming.
Yes, yes. Oh, heaven protect us, dear daughter.
Oh, his eyes. His claws.
So, you have kept your word and brought one of your daughters.
Yes. Yes, Beast, I have. But, sir, be gentle with my dear Beauty.
Silence. Have you come willingly, Beauty?
Yes, Beast, I have.
Good. One more question. Will you be content to stay here when your father goes away?
What, to stay?
Oh, Beast, you can't ask this. No, 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 it's too much.
Beauty.
If that is the price of my father's life, yes, I will stay.
No, Beauty, no, no.
Beast, sir. That was a brave and good answer, Beauty. I swear you will never regret it.
Why, how soft his voice is suddenly. And his eyes, they have tears in them.
I had almost given up hope. You, sir, it's time for you to go now.
Now? Tonight? At this late hour?
It will not be a long journey as you travel this time. When I turn this ring on my claw, close your eyes. You will then be carried swift as the wind out and over the land and placed safely in your own home. Are you ready?
Yes. Goodbye, dearest Beauty.
Goodbye, Father.
Close your eyes. I turn the ring so...
Oh, he's gone. Disappeared with the wind. It's magic.
Magic of no importance. Beauty, will you marry me?
What did you say?
I asked you to marry me. Yes, me, ugly beast that I am.
What shall I say? I'm afraid.
Oh, don't be afraid. Say whatever your heart tells you to. Will you marry me, Beauty?
Oh, no, Beast. I don't want to hurt your feelings. I'm sorry, but I just couldn't.
Very well. It's growing late. Your rooms are through that door. Your maid Clotilde is waiting. Retire now and don't be afraid. No harm will come to you. And everything that can be done to make you happy will be at your command. Good night.
Good night, Beast. Why, it's almost as if he were really kind for all his fearsome look. I'm not as frightened as I thought. Nothing but the moonlight.
I am in the moonlight. I am in the mists and the wind. I am in the perfume of all flowers, but you cannot see me.
Why, it's the voice Father told me about. The same soft voice that spoke to him. What would you have of me?
Be not misled by appearances. Do not judge by what you see on the surface. Be true to your heart. Be gentle. Don't be afraid. Do you understand?
I think so.
Here is someone else who wants to speak to you.
Where?
Here I am, Beauty.
Oh, I am dreaming. A handsome prince stands by the window. You are a prince, aren't you?
Yes, Beauty. A prince that adores you. Oh, my dear, will you meet the test? Will you be able to overcome...
Careful, Prince.
Overcome what, Prince? Please go on. I would do whatever you wished.
Perhaps you will. I want you to. But you must find the way by yourself. Farewell.
Oh, he's vanishing. He's gone. He's only a dream.
Wait, Beauty. Here is a locket. Tomorrow, open it. And you will find a picture of someone who loves you very much.
A locket? Oh, thank you.
Farewell, Beauty. Remember all I said. Farewell.
Farewell. But the locket. The locket is real. I can feel the cool gold. And the voice said there was a picture inside. I have a
a gold locket, a locket of gold. A prince gave it to me. Clotilde! Oh, Clotilde!
You want me, Miss Beauty?
Oh, Clotilde, I'm so very lonely. How long is it since I came to this mysterious castle?
Over a year, Miss Beauty.
Over a year. And in that time, I've seen no one but you and the other servants here. And the beast. The poor, ugly beast. My heart aches for him.
Yes, miss, I know.
He's so kind to me. I have only to wish for something, and it's mine. But, oh, Clotilde, how can I possibly do what he wishes? Every night for a year, he's asked me to marry him.
I know, miss. And I know how impossible it must seem to you. But still, if only in my dreams I see the prince of my heart. But he's only a dream. I wake up even more lonely, more frightened.
Oh, Miss Beauty, please don't cry. Clotilde, tell me one thing. Have you ever seen the prince whose picture is in this locket?
Miss Beauty, where did you get that?
A voice, that's all I know. A voice gave it to me. Who is he, Clotilde?
Oh, I dare not tell you.
Just like in my dreams. Mystery, always mystery. Mystery and pity and loneliness.
I hear the master coming. Miss Beauty is crying, sir.
Oh, come, Beauty. What is the matter? You mustn't cry and spoil your pretty eyes.
Oh, beast, forgive me, but I'm so homesick. I long to see my father and my sister.
You would leave a miserable, unhappy beast alone?
If only you'd let me go for just a little while. I'd come back and I'd never leave you again.
Oh, very well, then. If you will promise to return to me before the dark of the moon, you may go. Should you be longer than that, you will be too late.
Oh, I promise, beast.
So be it, then. Close your eyes, and when I turn this ring on my claw, you will be carried up and over the land just as your father went, straight to your home.
Oh, thank you, dear beast. Thank you.
Until the dark of the moon, farewell, my dear.
I do, your friend, the voice in the mist and the wind. You promised the beast you'd return. The moon is on the wane. The beast is dying.
The beast is dying? Oh, no. I didn't realize I'd been home so long. Oh, the poor beast.
Perhaps you may reach him in time. Are you ready?
Will you take me to him?
Close your eyes. Reach out your hand. Now we will fly with the speed of the wind.
There's the garden. Oh, hurry, put me down. I must find the beast.
Yes, find him before it is too late.
Oh, beast! Beast, where are you?
Beauty, is it you?
Oh, there you are. Oh, no. Oh, my poor beast, you lie stretched out on the ground. Where is everyone? Marylebone!
Oh, no. No, he cannot help. Only you. Oh, your hand on my head feels cool.
Oh, my dear beast. I didn't realize how much you meant to me until I feared you were dead.
Is that true?
Oh, it is. And I'll never leave you again. Never, as long as I live.
Beauty, once more I ask you. Will you marry me?
And this time, my answer is yes, Beast. I will marry you whenever you want me to.
Yes. You said yes.
Beauty, my beloved.
The prince of my dreams. Where did you come from? Where is the poor beast?
My darling, I am the beast, and the prince, too.
I don't understand.
I was under an enchantment, Beauty dear, condemned to live as that hideous beast until a maiden would appear who would have the courage to marry the ugly beast of her own free will. Then, and only then, could I hope to be set free.
And you are the prince who came to me in the night. But whose voice guided you and spoke to me and gave me this locket?
It was my voice, Beauty. I gave you the locket and spoke to you in the night. I am his fairy godmother.
Oh, I can see you now. How lovely you are.
And you are too, my dear.
And now, Beauty, will you make again the promise you made to the beast? Will you say you'll marry me?
Oh, yes, dear prince.
My beloved.
Bless you both, and may you live happily ever after.
And that's the famous old story of Beauty and the Beast.
Let's Pretend, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 5th of June, 1954 on CBS. This is an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of the Favorite Story series with an adaptation of Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels. According to my research, this would be among, if not the first program to take on an adaptation of this famous story. Others to follow would be the Tell It Again show and prestige drama programs like The World's Great Novels and the NBC University Theater, which in 1948 took on a half-hour version of the story, and in 1949 brought forth a full hour. Right now, the first from Favorite Story from September 17, 1946. It's Gulliver's Travels.
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half-hour, Favorite Story. Every child dreams of traveling into a land where the inhabitants are all the size of toy soldiers, where a general can use the palm of your hand for a parade ground. But it remained for a clergyman in a little church in Larrachore, Ireland, to bring this fancy to life in one of the most charming tales of our language. His name was Dean Jonathan Swift, and he used the fabulous voyages of a man he called Lemuel Gulliver to kid the living daylights out of the human race. This is one of the most fanciful satires ever penned, a devastating but delightful book that is as timely today as it was 2 centuries ago. The man who selected this as his favorite story is an Academy Award winner, the Paramount star Ray Milland. Dean Swift's Mr. Gulliver took 4 voyages in all. One was to the land of Brobdignag, where all the inhabitants were towering giants. One voyage was to Laputa, the land of the scientists, where one philosopher worked for 8 years to extract sunshine from a cucumber. A very famous voyage was to the land of the Houyhnhnms and the Yahoos, where the horses were the master race and human beings were tied up in stables. But the most celebrated voyage of all is the one you're going to hear as this week's favorite story. We're heading for the Isle of Lilliput, where the Lilliputians are as tall as one's thumb, and their behavior is pretty much on the same scale. So close your eyes, and before you know it, General Glumbuck, Galbasto Malialigoo, Admiral Flimnap, and a great many other distinguished personalities will be climbing up your sleeve in the general direction of your ear. Here's Ray Milland's favorite story, Act One.
My story opens on a storm.
Stand apart, Mr. Gulliver, lend a hand!
Aye, aye, sir!
Rock the head to starboard!
We're driving against the reef!
Abandon ship, Mr. Gulliver, pass the order!
Abandon ship!
By some miracle, I alone was thrown clear of the stricken ship. I swam as fortune directed me, pushed forward by the wind and tide, until, when I was ready to sink from exhaustion, my feet touched ground, and I staggered onto a wide and desolate beach, so tired and weak that I dropped to the ground and fell into a heavy sleep. Then suddenly I seemed to hear voices pounding and throbbing in my ears, strange little voices.
Courageous Lilliputians, buckle on your courage and subdue this terrible monster.
your men along the Man Mountain's left flank. I want 100 volunteers to stake the monster to the ground. Have the cables arrived?
The strongest ever forged in Lilliput.
We must bind him down before he awakens.
The volunteers are ready, sir.
I'll speak to them. Men, your deed will be spoken of by your children and by their children. Remember, the Man Mountain is to be made fast from head to foot. The armies of Lilliput stand ready for action. If the Man Mountain dares threaten you, the order is charge!
General Glumbuck.
Yes, Captain?
I desire to report that the Man Mountain is secured. The cables are in place.
Good. Instruct His Majesty's archers to draw their bows. And prepare to fire on him if he attempts to stir himself.
General, the Man Mountain's eyes, they are open and staring at us.
Alert the army. Draw your sword. Draw mine. No. No, I'll draw myself. I'll stand up to this colossus. Now, sir, you, Man Mountain, in the name of His Imperial Majesty, Galbasto Mullialigu, most mighty Emperor of Lilliput, I command you to remain where you are. Do not move a muscle, sir.
Can I believe my eyes? Do I really see before me a human creature no larger than my big toe, strutting on my chest and brandishing a sword at me? Oh, no, this is some folly worked by my tired brain. I'll rise up and wipe away this mockery. I can't move. I seem to be tied, strapped down. My hair is fettered to the ground. If only I could turn my head. Stop! The devil! They're shooting needles at me! Stop! Ow! What do you want of me?
You are a prisoner of His Imperial Majesty.
A prisoner of... Oh. Colonel, hear me. I am a peaceful man.
General, sir. General Glumbuck.
General, I am a peaceful man. I mean no harm to your people. Please loosen my bonds so that I might stretch my limbs.
Sorry, Man Mountain. Can't do it. I'd be hanged for a traitor. You see my position?
But I must have food, General, and drink. I have a great hunger, and my thirst is terrible.
Well, don't breathe so hard. Your chest heaves so I can scarcely hold my balance.
I'm so sorry.
And I think I'm growing a little sick with the motion. What were we discussing?
My dinner, General.
Well, yes. There I can oblige you, Man Mountain. While you slept, I arranged to have installed at the heel of your left foot a field kitchen where 60 of the king's finest cooks have prepared a meal for you.
Oh, good.
With your permission, the food will be conveyed to your mouth by means of ladders.
Oh, splendid.
Captain?
Yes, General?
Throw up the ladders and commandeer a troop of your bravest men to carry the food to the Man Mountain's mouth. And, Captain, you understand His Majesty's orders?
Yes, General. A powerful drug, strong enough to retire 3,000 Lilliputians, has been mixed into the drink.
Excellent.
Oh, most delicious. Though your barrels look like our thimbles. Oh, delicious.
The drug has taken effect. Now to work.
And while I slept, 1,000 engineers and carpenters set to work to build the greatest wagon ever conceived in Lilliput.
Pull, men! Pull!
Pull! And by means of pulleys, 900 men lifted me up.
Easy, men! Let him down easy! Bring up the right foot! Who is in charge of the right foot?
I am, Captain.
Put 40 more men on the anchor rope. That ought to do it. Up! Up! He's in! The Man Mountain is in the wagon!
And 1,500 of the Emperor's strongest horses, each nearly a quarter of an inch long, drew me to the city, where the king, standing on a scaffold erected to the level of my eyes, saluted me and addressed himself to my left ear.
Man Mountain, will you swear a peace with my kingdom
And will you render homage to me, its king?
I will, Your Majesty.
Then hear the articles under which you will be granted your freedom. 1. The Man Mountain shall not depart from our dominions without license from the king.
Agreed.
2. He shall take the utmost care not to trample upon the bodies of our loving subjects or take any of our citizens into his hands without their consent.
Well, of course not, of course.
3. The Man Mountain shall be our ally against our enemies on the island of Blefuscu and do his utmost to destroy their fleet, which is now preparing to invade us. Given at the palace of Beltheborax on the 12th day of the 91st moon of my reign, by Golbasto Mullioligu, scourge of the universe, whose feet press down to the center and whose head touches the sun. Oh, that's me. Do you consent to these terms, Man Mountain?
Most willingly, Your Majesty.
Fine. Now release the Man Mountain from his bonds, so that he may swear an oath of allegiance, according to the custom of Lilliput.
Release the Man Mountain!
That damn way the Man Mountain rises!
Ah, that's good. Mind if I stretch myself, Your Majesty?
Not at all.
What's that? Oh, thank you, Your Majesty.
Man Mountain.
I'll sit down, Your Majesty. We're rather out of touch with each other, with me standing.
Let the Man Mountain descend. Now, in order that your pledge may have effect, you must make the Lilliputian sign of trust.
And how is that done, Your Highness?
Place your right foot in your left hand, the middle of your right hand on the crown of your head, and your thumb on the tip of your left ear.
Middle? Right hand, thumb, there.
I congratulate you and welcome you to Lilliput.
Your Majesty, the search. You've forgotten. We are to examine the Man Mountain's pockets.
Yes. Man Mountain, one thing more.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Do not be offended now, but we think it's prudent that you be searched. You understand? A mere formality. Anything we take from you will be returned when you leave the country. A receipt will be issued you.
Well, I have nothing to hide, Your Majesty.
Well, still, I must insist that you turn out your pockets and place whatever objects they may hold in the great field to the right of us, which has been cleared for the purpose.
Very well.
My minister will write down a description of these articles for publication in our newspapers. Let us commence with your coat pocket, Man Mountain.
Great piece of cloth large enough to serve as a rug in His Majesty's throne room.
My handkerchief, Your Majesty.
A great silver chest the size of His Majesty's coat. Open it up, Man Mountain.
As you wish, sir.
It is filled with a kind of earth, a kind of brown...
Snuff, Your Majesty.
Close it up. Close the chest. Snuff? What devil substance is this?
Men of my country sniff it for pleasure, sir.
I don't believe it. Minister, let this chest be buried in the ground, lest this strange powder get loose and afflict our whole nation.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Well, what else, Man Mountain? Turn out your pockets. Let's have it all.
Let's see what he's got. A sword of entrance from the back of which extends several long poles resembling the palisades before His Majesty's castle.
They're only my comb, Your Majesty. And, last of all, this.
A
strange machine which appears to be a globe, half silver and half some transparent metal. And on the transparent side, certain curious figures. By Clippus! It talks!
What is the purpose of this instrument, Man Mountain?
Men of my land seldom do anything without consulting such a machine. It governs all their actions. It's called a watch.
I understand, Man Mountain. Minister, let this machine be placed in the great park outside my palace, and let a temple be built around it, and let the people come and bow down to it. No one shall say that the Emperor of Lilliput does not recognize the great god Watch.
By good behavior and a courteous observance of the laws of the land, I soon acquired the trust and confidence of the Lilliputians. I would sometimes lie down and let five or six of them dance on my hand, and the children delighted to play hide-and-seek in my hair. One day, the king ordained that I should have a new suit. The measurements were taken by the chief mathematician of the kingdom.
Twice around the thumb is once around the wrist. Twice around the wrist is once around the neck. Twice around the neck is once around the waist. Therefore, if the Man Mountain will graciously submit his finger for measurement, we shall know the dimensions of his entire body.
To be posted throughout the kingdom.
Wanted 500 seamstresses to fashion a shirt for the Man Mountain.
Wanted 700 tailors to shape a coat for the Man Mountain.
Wanted 600 cobblers. The Man Mountain requires a new pair of shoes.
On the outskirts of the palace grounds, a great house was thrown up for me by 6,000 carpenters, masons, and other craftsmen working night and day, and in the fields surrounding, hundreds of cows, cows the size of bumblebees. When roasted whole, two of them made a mouthful. But alas, I had an enemy in those days, Flimnap, Admiral Flimnap of the Imperial Navy, who took a strange and sinister dislike to me.
Your Majesty.
Yes, Flimnap.
This Man Mountain is a menace to our kingdom. Ah, when he walks, the earth trembles. Cracks appear in the ground, swallowing up your subjects. His head scrapes against the clouds, discharging rains which flood our rivers and drown our villages. I say the Man Mountain must be destroyed.
I have heard nothing of these calamities, Admiral Flimnap. I think you are jealous of him because he has allied himself with us against the Bafeskins. What do you say of this, General Glumbach?
I'm inclined to agree with your Majesty. The Man Mountain has announced a plan for the total elimination of the Blefuscan fleet, and this does not sit so well with our admiral, who desires the glory of such a triumph for himself.
Bah! Mark you, this Man Mountain bodes no good for Lilliput. I warn you, he is a menace and must be removed.
I was curious to know more of this minute kingdom and petitioned the king to reveal its history to me.
You see, Man Mountain, my kingdom has been engaged in a mighty war with the Blefuscans for 36 moons.
But what is your quarrel, sire?
I'm about to tell you. If you'll be good enough, Man Mountain, to stretch out your fingers so that I might lie back and rest my head. Thank you. Now then. As all men know, Man Mountain, in the old days, the way of breaking an egg was upon the large end.
Oh?
But my royal grandfather, who was only a child at the time, happened, while opening his egg at the large end, to cut his finger.
Oh.
Whereupon the emperor, his father, published a decree commanding all his subjects to break their eggs from that day on at the small or safe end.
Small or safe end.
Yes, mm-hmm. You follow me, Man Mountain?
Perfectly, Your Majesty. Eggs.
Eggs. Many Lilliputians rose up against the small end edict. Oh, those were gory days. Very gory days. Thousands of people suffered death rather than agree to break their eggs at the little end.
Oh, dear, dear.
And thousands more fled to the island of Blefuscu and raised powerful armies, and waged war against the kingdom of Lilliput. And now the big enders are preparing to attack us with a mighty fleet. Are you ready, Man Mountain, to assist in the defense of our empire according to the articles of your emancipation?
I am ready to defend the state of Lilliput against all invaders, Your Majesty. I have devised a plan for the capture of the entire Blefuscan fleet.
Glorious, Man Mountain.
Tomorrow at dawn, I shall perform the greatest naval maneuver in history. Single-handed. The Empire of Blefuscu was an island separated from Lilliput by a channel about 1,800 yards wide, which at its deepest part was 50 glumgluffs. That's about 4 English feet. At dawn of the following day, I equipped myself with some strings and fish hooks, and putting off my shoes and stockings, waded across to the harbor of Blefuscu. I arrived at the Blefuscan fleet, which consisted of 60 men of war and a number of transports. I fixed a hook to the bow of each ship, clipped off the anchor lines with my knife, and returned to Lilliput with the entire Blefuscan fleet in tow. The Blefuscans were too amazed to offer any resistance whatever.
Come back! Come back with our fleet! Please, come back! Come back with our ship!
In Lilliput, a national holiday was declared to celebrate my achievement. Yes, Your Majesty.
I desire you to stand erect in our public square with your legs asunder while my armies pass beneath you in a victory parade.
What a spectacle that was. 500,000 Lilliputians lined the streets as the soldiers of Lilliput marched under me, 24 abreast, while His Majesty reviewed them, seated on the buckle of my shoe. But my triumph was short-lived.
The Blefuscans are at our mercy. They know that with the great man Mountain as our protector and ally, we are invincible. Now let us sweep away these big and infidels.
Just a moment, Your Majesty. I agreed only to assist you in the defense of your country. And now that the danger is gone...
Well, the danger is never gone. While these Blefuscan barbarians continue to break their eggs at the big end, I will eliminate them. I will turn their kingdom into a Lilliputian province. Only I shall rule. The scourge of the universe. That's me.
Well, I'm sorry, Your Majesty. I refuse. This quarrel is not worth the lives of innocent people. I beseech Your Majesty, send ambassadors to Blefuscu to arrange a peace, an honorable peace.
Traitor!
I warned you, Your Majesty. I told you so.
You did, Admiral Flimnap. Indeed, you did.
General Glumbach.
Put me in your pocket. If I was seen here at your house, my life would not be worth a plug flick-knock.
Well, what brings you to me, General, in the middle of the night?
Your enemy, Admiral Flimnap, has convinced His Majesty that you must...
Yes, yes.
Oh, I hate to say it, Man Mountain, but you must be put to death.
What?
It's true. I have with me a copy of your death warrant. It reads... Since it is obvious that the Man Mountain is a big ender at heart, it is decreed that while he sleeps, he shall suffer to have his eyes put out by means of poisoned arrows, whereupon he will grow weak and, lacking food, die in misery. Signed, Galbasto Mullialigu, Emperor of Lilliput.
Though I might with my toe have kicked down the royal palace and ground out with my heel the lives of 100 Lilliputian men, I had no desire to harm these foolish little creatures. Instead, I made my way to the shore. It was my plan to wade across the channel again and seek haven with the Blefuscans. But there, floating against the beach, was the longboat of the Swallow, driven across the waters from the reef on which we had foundered weeks before. It was oarless but seaworthy. I stuffed my pockets with food and scooped up from a pasture a half dozen fine, fat Jersey cows, which I placed in my pocket. Then, without even a compass, I pushed off into the limitless sea. Days later, I was pulled aboard a merchant ship.
Board! Take him aboard, men! Over the side! Captain John Biddle, sir, commanding the Dolphin, bound for England. Are you all right, man?
By thunder, another Man Mountain.
Another what?
Oh, no, nothing, Captain, nothing. My name is Lemuel Gulliver. I was surgeon to the merchant ship Swallow. We struck a rock and all hands went down.
Huh?
I managed to reach the longboat. I've been floating on the seas for days, for many days, watching for a sail and dreaming. dreaming of men the size of my big toe. Hmm? Horses and cows I could put on my fingernails.
Well, now you've had a nasty time of it, Gulliver. But some food and rest, time to forget England again, and you'll be a new man.
Yes, dreams, strange dreams. Out there on the sea with only the sky for company, a man dreams. The Emperor's name was Galbasto Mali Ali Gu.
Take him below. Fix him a bunk, Mr. Williams. I'll get the ship's doctor.
Aye, aye, sir. Come along, Mr. Gulliver.
Aye, in dreams. Marvelous, incredible.
Full sail ahead. Put her in the wind, my lads. Poor fellow. Curious what the sun and open sea will do to a man's head.
Captain. Huh? Excuse me, Captain. Hmm. You'd best have this man Gulliver's clothes burned. He's brought some strange insects aboard.
Insects?
Look, on the deck. Several of them have dropped from his pockets as he climbed aboard.
What are they, man? Beetles? Mosquitoes?
There's one at your foot, sir. Trample it out. Don't take it in your hand, sir. It may be poisonous.
Oh, nonsense. Let's have a look at it. Good Lord, man. This is a cow. A live cow. A quarter of an inch long.
You've been listening to Jonathan Swift's famous satire, Gulliver's Travels, the favorite story of the star of so many screen hits, Ray Milland. We want to say right now that any resemblance to Lilliputians, living or dead, was purely coincidental.
Favorite Story on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast from September 17, 1946, bringing the curtain down on this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.